It's a busy season, so yishkoach for coming out, and I hope to just learn with you a little bit about sort of what we should be feeling on, what we should be feeling on Rosh Hashanah. If I were to ask you, like, do you think Rosh Hashanah is a time of happiness, a time of fear? Like, what's your first impressions when you think about this holiday?
Joy.
It's both.
It's both. Well, why? So you say it's joy. Why do you think it's joy?
For me, I love it. It's the beginning of the year.
You get to see people. Just like it's a celebration.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, just to put that, like, I mean, Tisha B'Av, you also get to see a lot of people too. But that's like a sad time.
Yeah.
Right. But it's beginning of the year. It's beginning of the year, so it's happy. You think it's both. What way do you think it's? So what's the sadness that you're feeling?
Sadness.
Or fear? What?
We know that, Yom Kippur comes.
Oh, Yom Kippur. So you're nervous about Yom Kippur. It's like, it's saying like Purim is not a happy time because you're nervous about Pesach preparations. Right. Okay. Okay. All right. Okay. What are your thoughts?
I would say fear. I would say it's solemn.
Solemn. Why is it solemn? Solemn.
Things you've done in the past, right. And then how you
want to
change yourself.
Okay, so it's the beginning of this kind of process of tshuva, maybe, so you're feeling a little nervous. Or you're not nervous, solemn, you're like, can't be too happy. I'm curious, so it's interesting, it's not really our topic, but like in Rosh Hashanah, there's not explicit mention, if you know, of slichos, of asking for forgiveness of tshuva. There's really a separate topic, if you ever thought about it. There's no I sinned. We have slichos, no slichos Rosh Hashanah, which is a topic unto itself. But I guess where I'm going to point to, you can cheat and look at the source sheet, and you already cheated. Or you can think about what elements of Rosh Hashanah combine both. Like, I think there, I'm going to give you like five examples where, like, inherent in Rosh Hashanah, we find both joy and fear. Can you think of anything within Rosh Hashanah that may, like, that's maybe it's just kind of solemn, like not so joyful, but also fear? Is there anything in the holiday itself which maybe you think, or in the halachic system of the right? So it's shofar, you think it's shofar, both joy and that, okay? And other thoughts are like, what about Rosh Hashanah, or what we're supposed to do, or perhaps different practices that may reflect both? So maybe the shofar, we're going to talk about that. So first of all, one big question is Rosh Hashanah called, does anyone know the source for the obligation to celebrate on a holiday? Like, is there a Torah obligation to celebrate on our holidays? You know where it comes from? There's a song, and it's a biblical song. V'samachta b'chagecha, right? So you've heard the song, right? So Pesach is called a chag, and Shavuos is called a chag, and Sukkot is called a chag. Now the question is Rosh Hashanah called a chag?
Yom Tov.
So Rosh Hashanah on the one hand is not called a chag in the Torah, and yet in Tehillim, the first source, Tiku b'chodesh shofar b'kesel yom chagenu. Okay? Rosh Hashanah is called the chag, but in Tehillim, but not in the Torah. So it's really a little confusing. Is it like, so is there a mitzvah of simcha, mitzvah of happiness, or not? It's like, it's not a chag in the Torah, but in Tehillim it is a chag. It's also a little confusing. Right? It's okay. There's a fascinating question. Some people felt, because they're so scared of judgment, we're very into positive psychology in the 21st century. So we're not so into, like, fear. But in the Gaonic era is like the 7th to 11th century, there was a whole discussion of, some people were so afraid about the Yom HaDin. So what do we do if we want to do tshuva? We're so scared. Well, what might be a religious practice that we're going to do to demonstrate that we're afraid of judgment and we're serious about the day? What might we do? What might someone do if they, like, are in a state of, fear and they're scared? And so sometimes, what do we do if there's no rain, in the days of the... What?
May fast.
So there's a whole discussion in the Gaonic era about, are you allowed to fast at Rosh Hashanah? Now, that will make all your recipe... you can just think, hey, we're going to fast the first day. It might make your life a lot easier. But there's a whole discussion in the Gaonim as to whether you're allowed to fast. And here he writes here, the Tshuvas HaGaonim, again, we're talking about 8th, 9th century, and the translation's not precise here, the English translation says, "Sha'alti milahano sebez yomim tovah d'Rosh Hashanah." Are you allowed to fast in 2 days of Rosh Hashanah? Again, make your life a lot easier. We wouldn't gain a lot of weight, you know, it'd be much easier. But are you allowed to do that? And he says, "Kachad aroim, yafeh shelo lisados." No, no, it's better not to fast. Why? So it's interesting that there are some people who wanted to fast because they're so scared. They felt this is the way to connect to God. We're scared of judgment. Shkach amu parnasa Yisrael harishodim. The early leaders of the Jewish people said what? Yisrael barosh hashana vata lachu ichlu mashmanim ushtu mamtakim, etc., etc. So you say, you know why you shouldn't fast? Because the early leaders said to the Jewish people, don't fast. And what the Gaonim, what this rabbi, what this Gaon is referencing is a story in Nehemiah. And the story in Nehemiah, right? Nehemiah is at the end of Tanakh. It's the Jews come back to Eretz Yisrael, and they're about to rebuild the second base of Megiddo. The question is, like, how are they so from? Are they not so from? So there's a whole scandal where, like, you know, stores are open on Shabbos, and even worse, you know, the Jews are intermarried, and then Ezra tries to, like, it's, we think nowadays there are problems of people, you know, some people are intermarried, some people are not Shomer Shabbat. Like, it's always been a problem. I don't know if it makes you feel better or worse, but they come back in time of the second base of Megiddo, and so what they do, and it says, right, and this is in the Nehemiah Perichas, it says that people all gather together, right, and they bring the Torah out, and then Pasuk Beis says, Vayavi Ezra HaKohen Esa Torah Lifnei HaKol Me'ish Vadisha V'chol Me'vin Lishmo B'yom Echad B'yom Echad L'Chodesh HaShvi. So Ezra gathers them together. Ezra's like the chief rabbi, and he brings them all together. Where? When is this? On the first day of the seventh month, the Rosh Hashanah, he brings the Sefer Torah, and Nehemiah, it goes on, and he says, like, I didn't quote the psukim, but basically they read the Torah, and the people are all like, they're scared because he said the Torah says you got to do this. Imagine if you just read the Torah for the first time, you do this, you're put to death. You do this, you're put to death. It's like we're so used to not being put to death, but imagine if you're like you go through the whole Torah, you do all these things, and like people are really scared, and this is Rosh Hashanah. And then, so people are scared. So Nehemiah turns to them in Pasuk Tes, and he says, "V'yomer Nehemiah," and he said, "Nehemiah, who hartishasa ve'Ezra akohen asofer." So the leaders, the political leaders, Nehemiah, the spiritual leaders, Ezra, and he says, "V'alavi mechinim esam lecholam." He says, "Hayom kadosh u'lashem." Today is the holy day for God. Elkechem al tisablu, don't mourn. Va'al tifku, and don't cry. Ki bochim kolam kishamam estivei Torah. Because the people are crying when they heard the words of the Torah. In other words, this is like a quasi, I don't know, Tisha B'Av. We don't look at it as a Tisha B'Av, but when these people heard about all they're supposed to do and that they're not doing it, the people are like, oh my gosh, we're goners. This is the end of us. And he says, no, don't cry. In fact, V'yomer lahem, and he says to them, L'chu ichlu mashmanim, go and eat good food, ishtu mamtakim, and have a drink, whatever, sweets, v'shilcho banos, lein nakon, send gifts to each other, ki kadosh yom ladoneinu, it's a holy day, v'al tiyatzu chi chedvat Hashem himozchem. Do not be sad, because Hashem wants you to rejoice. So it's interesting that in Nehemiah, already in the beginning of the second base of Mikdash, on the time when people are contemplating, you know, what they've done wrong, they want this to be a day of Avelis. They're so sad, and they're devastated. They're crying. So much so that Ezra and Nehemiah tell them, don't cry. Today's a day of rejoicing and eating. And again, this didn't end in the beginning of the second base of English period. This continued the time of the Gaonim. There are people who felt the same way. And the Gaonim said, don't fast. You should celebrate. If you look at most of the, there's a lot of literature on this. You look at most of the literature there of the Gaonim and the Rishonim. Rishonim is from 11th to 15th century. Most of the Rishonim say, don't fast. It's a happy day. You know, how much food you make, it's a separate question. But you don't have to fast. But interestingly, if you look how the Shulchan Aruch, that's a code of Jewish law, the 16th century, how does he paskin in terms of fasting? He says, Ochlim v'shosim usmeichim. You should eat, you should drink, and you should be happy. Ve'ein misani b'Rosh Hashanah, and don't fast on Rosh Hashanah. V'lo b'Shabbos Shuva. Interesting. Some people may have thought we should fast on Shabbos Shuva also. Omnam. However, lo yuchlu kol savam. Okay, but don't have too big of a feast. L'may lo yikalu roshav v'tiyah yiras yam al panayam. Okay, maybe again, maybe the word is solemn. Like, have a big feast, but not too much, so you still feel the reverence of God. But what's interesting, in the second halacha, he writes, Yesh mekomos, there are places, shekibla biyadam, that they had a tradition. Shekomi sharago lisanos Rosh Hashanah. That anyone who had the custom to fast Rosh Hashanah, umeshana regilosov eino misana, eino mashlim shna. So, if someone had a tradition, they fasted every year and they changed that tradition, it's bad news for them. So what's interesting is that even though it seems like don't fast, it's a happy day, there was a tradition among some communities, a very strong tradition, that people actually did fast on Rosh Hashanah. So you have this kind of like tension. Is it a chag? Is it not a chag? Do we fast? Do we not fast? Right? And then we talk about shofar. We talk about shofar. So I like this. Is shofar a happy sound or a sad sound? What would you say? What would you say?
It's like a awakening sound.
It's a wake up? Why would you say it's a sad sound?
It's not sad. It's very serious.
It's a serious sad. Okay. Okay.
I think it's both.
It's both. Why do you think it's both?
I don't know. I just think there are times we blow it where it is a rejoice, and it's right. Time we blow it when it's...
Right. So what about Rosh Hashanah? Do you think, Rosh Hashanah, like...
I think it's both.
You're...
More solemn.
If you're blowing it like on Purim, you're saying the shofar on Rosh Hashanah is more solemn. What you want to say?
No, I think both also. I mean, like we talk about the shofar sounding like cries, right? But also we go through the whole like Malchios part of Rosh Hashanah, where we talk about using the shofar to anoint the king.
So you're making two interesting points. Number one is the nature of the shofar sound. Is it a crying sound or not? So you're saying it is. At least some of the sounds are. And also you're saying, is a shofar for Malchus or something else? So I like to quote this Gemara. You look at number three. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, God says, Imu lefanai b'Rosh Hashanah Malchus Echoros HaShofar. Now we know that there are three middle blessings in the Musaf, right? You know, you have in every Shmon Esrei, every Amidah, you have three opening and three closing blessings, and then you have the middle blessing, or middle blessings. You know? So in the weekday, you have 13 middle blessings. On Shabbos and Yom Tov, you have one middle blessing. And on Musaf or Rosh Hashanah, you have three middle blessings. The theme of the first one is Malchios, the theme of the second one is Zichronos, and the theme of the third one is Shofros. So God says, I want you to say for me, I want you to say Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros. Malchios. So what's Malchios coordinating me? Kedei she'tamlichunu aleichem. So you will crown me as your king. Zichronos, remembrances. Kedei she'yavo lifanai zichronechem letova. So your remembrance will rise before me for good. Uva meh, with what? By shofar, with shofar. Seems to me that what this Gemara is telling us is that shofar accomplishes both Malchios and Zichronos, right? In other words, shofar is the mechanism to achieve Malchios and Zichronos. And I would like to argue, you know, you're saying like, are you happy? So it depends what theme. There are multiple themes in Rosh Hashanah. Malchios is what? You're coronating God. He's the king. You know, you go to a, you know, people like, you know, when they, in England, when they coronate whoever, the last people wake up in the middle of the night so they can stay up for that. Like it's like a big, you know, in America, people were like staying up so they can watch the coronation. Like it's a very festive and joyous event to watch a coronation of a king, of a queen, right? So that's a happy experience. Zichronos, what does that remind you of? Well, why we want God to remember us favorably, because what is he doing? He's judging us. Now, how does that make you feel? A little more scared. A little more scared. So I would argue that depending on the theme, within these themes, the Malchios is a happy theme, and the Zichronos is a little bit of a scary theme. Uva meh, and with what? What's the mechanism to achieve Malchios and Zichronos? Ba meh? Shofar. So what are the sounds of shofar? See, shofar... So according to Torah law, there are only two types of shofar sounds. There's the straight and the broken. Without getting into the details, when they say shofar is a crying sound, so that comes from the word Yom Truah. As the Torah says, Yom Truah Yelachem, or Zichron Truah. So it's a day of Teruah. In the Targum, that's the Aramaic translation of the word Truah, is Yom Yevava. So it's a cry, okay? And then, the rabbis learn from other words that you should do. Basically, you sandwich the crying sound, the broken sound, which is the crying sound, with two straight sounds. Okay, And there's a debate as to what the crying broken sound is. Is it a sigh, what we call a shvarim? Is it a whimper, what we call a trua, da, 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 da? Or is it a combination of the two? Is it a sigh following a whimper? If you notice, if any of your children or grandchildren cry, so they might cry as a sigh, they might cry as a whimper, they might cry as a sigh and then a whimper, but they will definitely not cry as a whimper then a sigh. But that's why we don't do trua shvarim. Because that's not, I'm saying that's why. Now there's people when they cry, they either cry a shvarim cry, like a sighing cry, they'll cry a whimpering cry, or they'll cry a sighing whimpering, but not the reverse. So because there's a debate as to what the broken sound was. Now, by the way, there's a whole debate about how we came across. We had straight, broken. The Torah, without getting into details, the Torah says basically you have to do straight, broken, straight, three times. So really it's only nine sounds. But according to, let's say, some rabbis, according to Rav Haigon, he said that in some communities, they had the shvarim sound as the middle sound. And in some communities, they had the trua sound as the middle sound. And in some communities, they had the shvarim trua sound as the middle sound. So believe it or not, this would never happen nowadays, Rabbi Abbahu in the 3rd century, what did he do? He was able to get everyone to agree, we'll do all of them. In other words, everyone's legitimate. There's actually a debate about this. The Rabbam says that if I'm a shvarim guy, then I think the trua people are wrong. And if you're a trua guy, then you're a trua person, then you think that I'm wrong. That's how the Rambam understood it. But Rav Haigon actually believed that each view was legitimate, and for the purpose of Achdus, we had one, you know, we followed one tradition where we all do, you know, we do all the straight, broken straight of Shvarim Trua and Shvarim Trua. But in any case, so fundamentally, there is a straight and there's a broken sound. There are only two different sounds. And I just brought to you in Bamidbar, turn the page, in Bamidbar Yud, this is Parshas Baloscha. So the Torah tells us, you know, when you're supposed to sound. Then this talk about trumpets, but just pay attention to the language here. The Torah says in Baaloscha, Perek Yud, Pasuk Tes, V'chisavo milchama bartzachem. Let's say there is a, what's a milchama?
War.
A war, where there's a battle. So how do you feel the battle? You feel scared, right? There's an enemy who is trying, an adversary is trying to get you. V'hareosem b'chatzosos. What word does that v'hareosem sound like? Which shofar sound does it sound like? Teruah, Vavriosam, right? You should cry out. It should be a da-da-da-da. Vavriosam, it's a scary sound, right? And hopefully you'll be saved. And what's Pasuk Yod? Uviyom simchaschem v'modechem. What's simchaschem v'modechem? What's simchaschem v'modechem? On your happy days, and on your moadim, on your festivals, uverad sheichat sheichem, and on your Rosh Chodeshes, right? What sound do you make? Usakatem, a tekiah, a straight sound, a happy sound. So if I were to ask you, what is the shofar sound, a happy sound or a scary sound? It depends which sound. I think I'm not giving you like a wild drush. I think this is pashup shot in the different sounds. The straight sound is a happy sound, and the key is a straight sound, and the broken sound, whatever, whether you hold a shvarim or trua combination, that's the crying sound, that's the sad sound, that's the war sound. So inherent in the shofar itself, you have happiness, joy, and fear. And I think based on the Gemara that we read, it's based on this notion that Malchus and Zichronos, both these major themes of Rosh Hashanah, also happiness and fear. I think also, I found two other examples, there could be more, but I found two other examples. Also this notion that the Mishnah says in Rosh Hashanah, Mishnah says that everyone comes to God like how?
Sheep.
So that's one explanation. The reason why we say it's sheep, in Hebrew, what is it? B'nei Barod. The reason why we say it's sheep is because the author of Udesada Tokef translates it as sheep. Meaning, he says, Kivakaras roa edro ketavir, right? Whatever the tune is that we have, like the haunting tune. So the author of Udesada Tokef translated B'nai Maron as sheep. But the truth is, there are different definitions. There are three different definitions in the Gemara. If you look at the Gemara, Rosh Hashanah, and by the way, Unisana Tokef is a scary, that's like, that's a scary, probably one of the most scary piyutim in the Yom Neroim liturgy. In the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yud Chesed Aleph, he says, Rosh Hashanah, Kol Ba'ahaya Olab, Ovrim Lefadav Kivnei Maron. So he cites the Mishnah that on Rosh Hashanah, every human being passes before God, Kivnei Maron. And then the Gemara says, My Kivnei Maron. That's a very strange phrase. What is B'nei Maron? So halcha targibu. So here in Bavel, they translate it kivne imrana, like sheep. And that's the way that the author of Nesana Tokev translated it. Reish Lakish Bar Reish Lakish says, Kema'alas Beis Choron, or Moron. He says, like the ascent of Beit Maron. And Rashi explains that Beit Maron was like this, like what are these, like narrow passageways, and you had to go one by one, because if you went one to left, you move a little bit to left, a little to right, you would fall off a cliff, you'd fall off. So he said, so it's also very scary, but the like sheep is like very humble, I'm going like sheep, very humble, you're very scared. Second explanation, also very scary, but it's interesting. The third, Rav Yehuda says, David Shmuel, kechayelot shel Beit David. B'nei Baron is? You're being judged, but you're like soldiers at the house of David HaMelech. So I don't know, when I'm walking as a soldier, like not just any soldier, but the soldier of David, I'm walking with confidence. I'm not afraid. So now there is, maybe we are coming before God, but I'm coming like a chayal Beit David. You see how all the chayalim in Israel, like, you know, we're scared for them. We're scared of the chayalim going to Gaza, right? We're scared of them, you know, if they're going to go into Lebanon, what's going to be, we don't know. We're scared when we think about them. You see how they are. Before they go in, they're confident. They're anything but scared, right? You don't. At least none of the videos show any of them being scared. At least they have a very, very high morale. So Chayelot Beit David, again, depending on your definition of Bnei Maron, it's either scary, but the other definition is confident, happy. We're going to do it. I'm going to look the Sutton straight in the face. I got you. I can control over you. You know, like you go into court and like, I'm good, right? So, and finally, and perhaps this might be most explicit about this tension between happiness and fear, is the Rambam in Hilchos Megillah. And the Rambam is talking about when you're supposed to say Hallel or not. So the Rambam writes in Hilchos Megillah, Paragim, Allah above, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippurim, Ein Bahem Hallel. There's no Hallel on Rosh Hashanah Kippur. Why? Lefi Shehem, Yimei Teshuva, V'yira, V'pachad, Lo Yimei Simcha Yisera. Because there are days of repentance and fear and dread, but not days of? No, but they didn't say that. Simcha Yetera. What does it mean, Simcha Yetera?
Excessive
happiness. Means you can have some, but not a lot. Okay, so we see the tension is very clear. And the question is, so I just gave you five examples, too, that may if I have thought a little more, I could give more examples. But it's very clear within this holiday, I think this is very unique, Rosh Hashanah. I don't think you find that in any other holiday where you have these two opposing, and again, I'm not being like a rabbi, like someone's rabbi, or like you give a drasha to like, I'm not saying things I think that are far-fetched here. I think this is pretty clear that within the halachic system, the rules and how the holiday is described, you have both of these very opposing themes. I don't think you find that in any other holiday in such a very blatant, profound, very overt way. And the question, what do you do with it, right? So I think there are at least three ways that we can sort of deal with this kind of tension. So one way could be is that maybe you could choose. Not in a bad way. I mean, for example, some people, like we saw, some people had a tradition to fast, and some people didn't have a tradition to fast. And maybe, I like to say, you know, like, how do we view God? Is God our parent, or God is a king, or God is a spouse, or God is our doctor, right? You have different ways that we relate to God. And maybe, you know, so what way should I relate to God? So it may depend on the time, situation you're in. And it could be that the ultimate goal is for us to connect with God, to grow in our spirituality, to observe mitzvos. And we could pick and choose, right, how we want to view God. You know, maybe, right, how we want to view God, maybe in some instances. And hopefully that will motivate us. So maybe if, for some of us, maybe, you know, like you have different people, like, a Litvak versus a Chassid in terms of how they approach their Judaism, right? So maybe a Rosh Hashanah, like a Tisha B'Av, you got to be sad. You got to be sad at Tisha B'Av. A Purim, you got to be happy, okay? Like, that's pretty clear. But maybe you could take the view that Rosh Hashanah, you got to do what works for you. Some people fast, some people don't fast. And there's room, you know, depending on your situation for, you know, how you want to relate to God. Maybe. But maybe we could look at two other approaches. So another approach is the following. So if you look at this Talmud Yerushalmi says the following. He says, Amar Rav Sibod. Rav Sibod said, "Ksiv, it's written, Ubi goy gadol asher lo chukim u'mishpatim tzadikim. Who is a great nation that has statutes and righteous laws, etc.? Rav Chaba be Rav Chanina, Rav Hoshaya. So Rav Chanina, son of Rav Chana, the son of Rav Chanina, Rav Hoshaya. Chadamar, so one said the following. He's explaining this pasuk. Who is such a great nation like the Jewish people? So what does this mean? Ezel uba keuba hazos. Which nation is like our nation? What happens? In most nations, person knows he has a judgment. He's wearing black. Black means like you're in a dark mood. You're like covered in black. And they grow their beard. Like you're totally frazzled. You can't function. Right? You don't know what's going to be. You're totally paralyzed. If your day of judgment is coming in front of the king, right, or in front of a judge, whatever the case is, you are totally frazzled. You don't know what's going to be. You cannot function. Ava Yisrael ain't okay. But the Jewish people are not like this. Elaloshim levadim, they wear white. Ubisatfim levadim, and they're covered. They cover themselves and they wrap themselves in white. They shave before. They eat, they drink, and they're happy. They know that Hashem performs miracles for them. In other words, it's true. It's a Yom Din, it's a scary day. I like to say that maybe we start off with a tekiah and Malchios, God is our king. And then we say, oh, wait, God is our king. What does the king do? Oh, he's judging us. I'm scared now. Now we have the Trua, right? But what do we end off with? Kia. It'll be okay. Because God still loves us. It's like one of these like Shlomo Karbach stories where Shlomo like sees some person and it's like, this guy's really, really scared. He's really scared. So he's very nervous. And Shlomo goes up to him, Rabbi Yid, why are you so nervous? So I'm very nervous. Like it's a serious mitzvah. It's like, well, for Rosh Hashanah, I'm very nervous. What's going to be? What's going to be? I don't know if God's going to be favorably or not. What's going to be? What's going to be? So I said, don't worry. He said, wait, how can I not worry? How can I worry? Like, what's going to be if I'm not, if God is just be favorably, what's going to be? He's stammering. What's going to be? So I said, don't worry. I got news for you. Don't worry. I'm going to help you out. How are you going to help me out? Trust me. I know the judge. He's my father. Right? He's Malkenu, but he's also Avinu, right? He's my father. So this notion, right? Tekiah, Malchios, Zichronos, I'm scared, but at the end of the day, Tekiah again. We end off, he'll take care of us. That's maybe the Rishalmi's approach. That like we need to be scared, because at the end of the day, you know, you could say, at some point you need to be scared to motivate yourself. It has to be real fear, you have to take it seriously. But at the end of the day, we pray that God will judge us favorably, right? It's a little harder now, right? It's a little harder now because, you know, we hope for the good and God, we have confidence that things will be good. We just experienced October 7th. It's a little harder now. It's a little harder this year to say this. So it's a little harder to feel this. Again, you know, we can say God knows and God will judge us favorably, it'll be good. It's a little harder. Again, most years, we have to manufacture fear. This year, we don't have to manufacture fear, right?
Already experienced.
Yeah, I'm saying, we don't have to manufacture. So maybe we can look, I want to suggest one other approach in terms of how we balance the joy and the fear. And maybe, you know, I did tell this story once before, but it's worth repeating. So in Elie Wiesel's memoirs, one of his memoirs, he writes how in the 1960s, he came to Brooklyn in order to meet the Lubavitcher Rebbe for the first time. And the Rebbe had read some of his works in French, and he asked Elie Wiesel to explain why, I guess Elie Wiesel wrote that he was angry with God after the Holocaust. And yeah, he asked him, he said, why are you angry with God? So Elie Wiesel said, because I loved him too much. And the Rebbe said, and now? So he said, now too, said Elie Wiesel, now because I love him, I am angry with him. And the Rebbe disagreed. To love God is to accept that you do not understand him. Then Elie Wiesel asked the Rebbe, he said, how can you believe in God after Auschwitz? And the Rebbe looked at him in silence for a long moment, his hands resting on the table. And then he replied with a soft, barely audible voice, and he said, "How can you not believe in God after Auschwitz?" And Elie Wiesel was like, "What?" He's like, he didn't understand, like, what the Rebbe was talking about. And the Rebbe turns to him and he says, "Don't you know, do you think I don't know it? Do you think I have no eyes to see, no ears to hear, that my heart doesn't revolt because of the Holocaust?" But because Elie Wiesel loved God already so much, he was someone who already had a deep faith in God. And someone like that, again, chas v'shalom, I'm not judging anyone who's been through a horrific experience and what happened to them. I'm not judging anyone. But the Lubavitcher Rebbe believed that because Elie Wiesel already had such a deep faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he said that someone like that will use the questions to struggle even more with God and to develop an even deeper faith in God. I know it seems strange, but someone who already has such a deep faith in God and loves God so much and is troubled by what's going on will struggle with God even more. It's like you have a parent. You understand why a parent did that, but you'll fight with it more. You'll fight with the parent. You'll argue with the parent, but then at the end of the day, you develop an even stronger, more intense relationship with the parent, and in fact, it will lead to even greater faith. And the Rebbe knew what Elie Wiesel stated in his memoirs, quote, "I have never renounced my faith in God. I have risen against his justice, protested his silence, and sometimes his absence. But my anger rises up within faith and not outside it. I admit that this is hardly an original position. It is part of the Jewish tradition. Avraham and Moshe, Yirmiyahu, Rav Levi, Yitzchak, Berdichev teach us that it is permissible for man to accuse God, provided that it be done in the name of faith in God." And at that first meeting between Elie Wiesel and the Rebbe, Elie Wiesel confessed to the Rebbe, "You ask what I expect of you. Make me able to cry." He wants to have some emotion as relates to God. And the Rebbe's response is, "That's not enough. I shall teach you to sing. Grown people don't cry. Beggars don't cry. You must sing." And his point, the point of the Rebbe was that the man of faith and the woman of faith has questions, struggles with them, struggles with God. They may even go through the most horrific of circumstances like the Holocaust. But some people who have made their relationship with God a lifelong project are able to sing. And the Rebbe sensed that Elie Wiesel was one such person. And not to judge anyone who, you know, didn't believe after the Holocaust, but the Rebbe understood that Elie Wiesel had such a deep faith that the Holocaust would not shake his faith. And this meeting had such a profound effect on Elie Wiesel that in 1973, he composed a cantata entitled Ani Mamim, a song lost and found again. And I wrote here, I have it on the end of the source sheet, this is the end of his cantata. This is what he writes. This song, "I believe in you, even against your will, even if you punish me for believing in you. Blessed are the fools who shout their faith. Blessed are the fools who go on laughing, who mock the man who mocks the Jew, who help their brothers singing over and over and over. I believe in the coming of the Messiah, and though he tarries, I wait daily for his coming. I believe." You know, how should we feel on Rosh Hashanah, and specifically this Rosh Hashanah? So on one level, this year, like I mentioned, is different than other years, because in other years we need to manufacture the fear that we're supposed to feel on Rosh Hashanah. But this year we don't have to manufacture the fear, right? Even right now we're still crying and we're still davening. You know, the hostages, the soldiers in Gaza, situation up north, you know, the threat from Iran and Hezbollah, it's real. There is room to fear. At the same time, if we love God so much and we focus really on our emunah, and so much over the next few weeks, whatever different things build our emunah. For some of us, it's the heartfelt tefillah. For some of us, it could be studying certain types of Torah. Whatever it is, to the extent that we work on our emunah, our faith, over the next few weeks, then the fear that we're all feeling post October 7th will result in a lot of soul searching, as it already has. But ultimately, if we continue working on our emunah, it will result actually in a deeper connection to Hashem. And for me, at least, what gives me strength is I think about the parents of children and the wives of husbands who were killed in this war, Jennifer Early, Varda Morel, who spoke here, Rabbi Doron Perez, Hadass Lowenstein. They are finding a way to go on with life. They find a way to go on and sing and celebrate even when they have a hole in their heart. In other words, they are finding a way to say, I have the fear, but I'm not going to allow that to completely eliminate and cancel out any joy. I'm going to go on to celebrate. I'm still going to make a wedding. I'm still going to celebrate. And I would argue that maybe if you think about what Rosh Hashanah is all about, like what's the theme of Rosh Hashanah? Right? Every holiday has its own theme and try to educate us. There are so many lessons and values for each holiday. Maybe the holiday of Rosh Hashanah is the holiday specifically geared to guide us how to celebrate with fear, which we all need. Because we go through that a lot in our lives, whether it's a national thing or whether sometimes, you know, we're going through personal crises. And how do we celebrate? How can we celebrate? Can we celebrate when we're afraid, when we're scared, when we're nervous? And Rosh Hashanah is that model to have both. In other words, not to let the fear paralyze us. Like Elie Wiesel, like what thousands of years ago Ezra and Nehemiah told the returnees to Eretz Yisrael. Don't mourn, don't cry. You can be a little nervous, be a little solemn, but celebrate also, be happy. And hopefully we can be inspired again. We should think about October 7th and the fear of what will be and what was, what will be. But don't only think about that. Let's also be inspired, not just by Elie Wiesel and Nehemiah and Ezra, but let's be inspired by the modern day heroes of Emunah. There's so many of them. Don't only read the scary stories. Find opportunities to be inspired, either through our tefillot or through these people, unbelievable people that in our lives that we see. Heroes of Emunah, and maybe through them, we can work on our own Emunah so that, yes, we can achieve what actually Rosh Hashanah was designed to help us achieve, which is what? Experience the fear of Rosh Hashanah, but at the same time, experience the joy and the celebration as well.